Hi, welcome back to another episode of The Mindful Space. Today we will be talking about anxiety, and I am happy to introduce Nadia. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Good. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Before we dig in, I want to allow you to introduce yourself and let our audience know what is it that you do.
Well, my name is Nadia Fiorita. I am a licensed psychotherapist, an anxiety expert, and I have a one-on-one virtual practice, and I work with women and teens who struggle with high-functioning anxiety.
Now, when we talk about anxiety, I know people use that word very lightly. Yeah, I have anxiety, this and that. Mm-hmm. But what is it? What's the actual definition?
So anxiety is a human, a normal human emotion. And the way that I like to really think about it and help my clients understand anxiety or others understand anxiety is that it's a sense of distress or apprehension or worry about the future, right? We have anxiety about a potential future outcome. It's a normal emotion, and it's really an evolutionary emotion that has helped us survive throughout time.
Now, your specialty, per se, is high-function anxiety. What would be the difference?
There's a big, when we talk about anxiety, it's more general, right? And high-functioning anxiety is really, there's not a formal clinical diagnosis with regards to high-functioning anxiety, but it really is becoming more and more common, more prevalent. And I think there's this, you know, increased awareness around what it is. And it's really interesting because on the outside, someone might appear to have it all together, right? They appear to be successful. They're high achieving. They're, you know, the organized one, the planner, the detail oriented one. But really on the inside, they're struggling. There's this, you know, internal sense of overthinking and self-doubt, and they have a very overactive mind. There's, you know, perfectionistic tendencies with regards to high functioning anxiety. There's people pleasing tendencies. You know, they're more prone to feeling physical and mental exhaustion. So it's really interesting because on the outside, it might appear that this person has it all together, but inside, you know, there's really like a lot going on.
A lot of anxiety.
Right. Exactly.
Now, why focus in women? Because that's your specialty?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I first started out, I was trained in trauma-focused therapies, and really I started, like, it was interesting, the evolution of my practice, because I started working with young adolescent teens and young adults. And it was just kind of, I don't know, this natural thing that happened where I was just working a lot with teens. And now my practice has evolved to working with high-achieving women. And because I've been through it myself.
Okay.
So there's a personal, you know, connection. I have a personal experience with it myself, too.
What are some warning, some common warning signs of this high functioning anxiety?
Yeah. So, I mean, and I guess with the warning signs too, we can talk about just like general anxiety as well.
Yeah.
So difficulty sleeping is a big one. There might be some irritability and anger, which I think people don't necessarily understand that connection. So irritability, anger, they might have low patience. There might be some changes in appetite. A big one, a really important one, is just excessive worry and then the inability to control that worry. Like I said before, overthinking, there tends to be a lot going on, in someone's mind, very, very overactive mind. There might be some avoidance that could be, you know, a big sign if someone's avoiding the things that are actually causing them anxiety.
Yeah. For a high functioning anxiety person, how do you see those signs if they have it all together? Do people come to you and they recognize, or do you have to tell them, well, what you're going through is not normal, it's actually anxiety?
I mean, it's interesting because I think when people come to me to work with me, it's because of what they've seen on social media. The education around it, the awareness of it. I think they know that something's off. They've lived with this anxiety. And when they see the information about, oh, on the outside, it appears, you know, you're successful, you're high achieving, you might be, you know, a top student in your class. If we're talking about, like, you know, adolescents or college students, you're a top person in your class and you're on the sports team and you're on the debate team and you're, you know, in government, like student government.
Doing it all,
but on the inside, just like, you know, carrying all this anxiety. Then they start to think back and they're like, I guess I've, you know, I know that I felt anxious. I just didn't know it was anxiety, or I didn't know it was high functioning anxiety. Yeah.
What about physical symptoms? Are there any
that we can... really good question. So some of the more common physical symptoms are fatigue, low energy, insomnia or problems with sleeping, which happens a lot. GI issues, so anything related to digestion, problems with digestion could be some of the physical symptoms. You know, rapid heart rate, shallow breathing, sometimes chest pain, which I think could be a more, you know, scary symptom for women. There was a couple more I wanted to share.
Just like fidgety movements.
Fidgety movements, sweating, muscle depending. Tension, sweatiness, shakiness.
There's a lot.
And I think it's important to know that, like, when we talk about anxiety or high functioning anxiety, it manifests in different ways, right? Okay. It could come up in the way that we think about things, in our thoughts or beliefs. It can manifest physically. It comes out in our behavior. So it's important to really kind of be mindful about how that might manifest for you.
Would that be the first step? Just being mindful of where, kind of pinpoint, where is it coming from?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I always talk about the importance of self-awareness just in general, like really kind of being in tune to yourself and how it might be manifesting and, you know, again, in your behavior or the way that you're thinking about things, or, you know, is it hard for you to be present and engaged, you know, in your daily life?
Yeah.
Are you more irritable? Are you snapping at people? You know, like those types of things.
I tend to do that one if I'm feeling stress. I'll snap at my son. He's like, Mom. I was like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Now, is there anything that might trigger anxiety in women? Like something specifically?
Yeah. That's a great question. It depends on the woman. But sometimes it can be triggered by earlier childhood trauma, because we know what that does to the, you know, nervous system. It could be hormonal imbalances. I think that one's,
that's a big one.
There could be a genetic, you know, predisposition. So if someone in your family has anxiety, you might be more likely to experience it. I mean, those are like three major ones that I would say. Yeah.
What do you see the most in your practice as a being a trigger?
Such a mix. Okay. Yeah.
So it really just depends case by case.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing too that can trigger it are just big life changes, transitions.
Important.
Right? Are you making a move? Are you becoming a mom? Are you getting married?
Well, becoming a mom could definitely be a mix of hormonal and changes. If you're pregnant, that's a big
one. Yes.
What are the most common anxiety disorders, or which one do you see the most in your practice?
The ones I see the most in my practice are generalized anxiety and high functioning anxiety. Mostly because that's really where my niche is, and those are really the types of clients that I see.
Okay.
But in general, with women, I think the most common ones are generalized anxiety disorder, social disorder, and panic disorder.
That makes sense. We do panic a lot. Yes. Is there an age where anxiety peaks in women?
Another great question. So it depends on the person.
Okay.
But what I have found is that it usually starts to develop in adolescence, late adolescence, and then it tends to peak in adulthood. And then what we find from the research that I've done is that it tends to kind of go down later in life.
So basically when you start getting responsibilities and then when you're done and retire.
Cool. Yeah. And that when you're sense. Like, when you're taking on more, you know, as an adolescent, and then I think, you know, as you're kind of becoming more independent and self-sufficient.
Yeah. Oh, makes complete sense.
Yeah.
For those that do suffer from anxiety, what could be some coping skills that they could use at home, or which ones do you teach in your practice?
Oh, I love this.
I know there's a thousand.
Yeah, there's
maybe
so many.
Maybe pick like top two.
Yeah. I mean, deep breathing, I think, is just such an important one that everyone should really take the time to learn and practice. I mean, we have access to our own breath, right? Yeah. And not even just in the moments where you might be feeling the anxiety at a really high level, but I think if you're able to practice that more consistently, maybe making it a part of your early morning routine, that will really, really make a big difference.
It sounds so simple.
It sounds very simple.
But it's hard definitely hard to practice. Having an anxiety attack.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I think if you're able to integrate something into your routine and like the part of your day, then you might find that you're at those, you know, heightened levels a lot less.
Yeah. What else would be a good coping strategy?
I love listening to music. You know, I think that's a great one. Not necessarily listening to something that might rev you up.
So, you know, rock.
Not rock. Something
well, maybe that calms you down. Who knows?
Maybe.
It all depends.
Yeah. I like something a little bit more, you know, calming and soothing. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think has become really popular and, you know, kind of trending, but also really effective is cold water exposure.
Is that the one with the face or the whole body?
You could do either.
I've seen it all.
You could do either.
There's a trend.
I think the, you know, putting your face in ice cold water, that really, really helps. It helps to drop your heart rate, and it actually redirects your oxygen to your brain and your heart. So it helps you to regulate your emotion.
It would just shock me.
That's really what it does. Yeah. Okay. You can also, this is like a trick that I learned when I worked at a psychiatric hospital. A number of years ago, we used to put fruit in the freezer. It was a transitional living program. Okay. And so you can, you know, grab a lemon, a lime, an orange, and, you know, it's really, really cold, and holding it in your hand helps you to, you know, feel better too.
Yeah, you get distracted on something else.
Yeah, exactly.
If it works in a psychiatric unit, I'm pretty sure it can work at home.
Right.
Now, in general, how are anxiety disorders treated?
For the most part, I think what we've, you know, really talked about in terms of the mental health field, the standard has been psychotherapy and counseling combined with medication. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're really kind of getting focused care and treatment on one and, you know, one-on-one individual counseling or therapy, and then you might be taking a medication. But I really do believe that, at least in my experience too, women are looking for more natural, holistic approaches. Mm-hmm. And not that medication is bad. I think just that they're really looking to find more holistic options. Nutrition, whether it's, you know, acupuncture or massage therapy, creative therapies, right? Music, art, dancing. Mm-hmm. I think there's really so many options.
Is there one in particular that you focus or tend to focus on or recommend? Or it's
again. I mean, exercise is such a such an important one. I just have such a passion for holistic health and wellness in general. Mm-hmm. Aside from just the clinical work that I do, so you know, I love to promote exercise. Nutrition, I think, is really key. Mm-hmm. Spirituality and faith are really important as well. So yeah, I really love that we're having a more broad conversation around it and kind of expanding what people can do to really help reduce, you know, anxiety and learn how to cope better with it.
Without having to only resort on medicine.
Yeah. And I think what happens is a lot of people get on medicine or medication and then they don't do the therapy part. Right. And so they might find some relief. They might find it, you know, helps a little bit, but then are they really kind of learning how to identify what triggers them, how they're coping with anxiety, you know, what earlier experiences might be contributing to some of their stress and anxiety now.
Yeah.
So it's really important to I think, have more than one, you know, method and approach. Yeah.
Yes. And I agree. I think that medicine and therapy should go hand in hand always, but not everybody does it. Not everybody follows through.
No, what I find is a lot of people get their medication from their primary doctor. And so
they didn't even go to the psychiatrist.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. And so they're not the expert, exactly. Right? In terms of that medication. And also, are they having a conversation? And they might be. I think a lot of primary care doctors are, you know, nowadays, encouraging people to seek therapy and counseling, which is great. Mm-hmm.
I think everybody should seek counseling.
I agree.
Even therapists.
I agree.
What are the latest research findings in anxiety disorder in women?
So what I am finding like really, really fascinating recently, and what I have been diving more into, is research on the gut microbiome.
Okay.
So what we're finding is that really important neurotransmitters are produced not, you know, just in the brain, but also in the gut. Okay. And so this whole conversation around brain health and gut health, and how your gut health, you know, impacts your level of anxiety, your ability to think clearly, managing stress. Like, I just think it's a really, really fascinating area, and I can't wait to see more research about it.
What was the name again? The bio.
Oh, the gut microbiome.
Microbiome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Haven't heard about it.
There's talk about psychobiotics.
Okay.
So probiotics and, you know, these supplementations or ingredients or natural therapies that we can take that are basic. It's basically, you know, really, really good nutrition and herbs and therapies that really help to feed the microbiome to help us have better mental health.
Oh, wow. So I mean, I feel like, and we were just talking about this in another interview. It's all about nutrition, and you don't really think about it. But imagine if you could just go to therapy and be like, this is your treatment, and you just get like one apple a day kind of thing.
Exactly.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. For those that might be listening that suffer from anxiety, or for those that might be considering seeking help, what would be your recommendation for them?
Well, first I would say you're definitely not alone.
Okay.
Right. And I think that's, you know, I was talking to someone, I think earlier this week, and they were, you know, sharing what they were going through. And they're like, I know that I'm not alone. And, you know, that internal message that they were able to say to themselves really helped them get through that moment. So you're not alone. And I don't know. Like, if you're thinking about seeking counseling and therapy, like, just go for it. Like, it's definitely important to find the right person. And if you're not taking that step, I would definitely encourage you to like think about maybe what your concerns are or what your fears are, because it can definitely be like a transformative experience. And I think making that investment in yourself and seeking help and opening up about all of that, you know, all the stuff that you might be going through, is definitely, it puts you in a more vulnerable place, but I think it's an act of courage and strength for sure.
A question I get asked a lot is, how can anyone help somebody else? You know, how can I help somebody that might be going through an anxious episode or a panic attack? Or how can I help that person?
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is just be there with them. You know, I mean, if someone's going through a panic attack, that might be different than someone coming to you and saying, like, I'm feeling a lot of overwhelm or I'm feeling anxiety. In that instance, ask questions, you know, really focus on active listening and just providing support. You know, I think sometimes we go to a place of like, I want to fix it, I want to problem solve. But a lot of the times we want to just be listened to and supported. If someone's going through an anxiety attack, that's a different, that's a different thing. And there might be, you know, coping skills or strategies that they already know that are helpful to them that you can encourage them to use in those moments.
And if they're wanting to seek help, just encourage them to go for it.
Yeah.
Because like you said, if you don't go, then you'll never know.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of resources now, you know, Psychology Today, Mental Health Match. I mean, there's tons of therapists on social media right now, yes. right? That you can, you know, see their personalities. You can see their, you know, how they show up authentically and, mm-hmm. you know.
That's important too, because I have a lot of people that tell me, oh, I tried it once and it just wasn't for me. And it's like, oh, I don't know, the therapist was weird or he said this or she said this. And I was like, well, just go to a different one. Just try it out.
Yeah, I think it could probably be discouraging if someone's gone to one therapist and it hasn't been a positive experience. Then maybe they mm-hmm. think it just doesn't work in general, or it's yes. really hard to find the right person. So I can understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that you have gone through your own anxiety experience. Yeah. Would you like to elaborate on that?
I think I can start with just like my early experiences, like going through a couple traumatic things that over time really kind of contributed to this chronic and persistent anxiety that really, you know, when I look back, it really showed up in like a lot of different areas, socially, my career, my family relationships, my intimate relationships. So I mean, when I talk to the women that I work with now, I don't necessarily share specifics about my story, but I think one of the things that's really draws them in is that I've had my own experience. And I think they know that because it's something that I talk a little bit about on social media.
Okay.
And so I think that helps to make me a better clinician also, because I've done a lot of research. I've gone through my own therapy. I'm like, you know, I have this drive to just better myself consistently.
Yeah.
And so I think my clients really appreciate that.
At what age did you have this anxiety? Was it when you were younger or just throughout life? Do you still manage?
I still do manage it, actually. It, you know, when we talked about like, when it peaks in women, it's kind of like the same trajectory. So it kind of started in adolescence, okay. and then probably got really bad in my 20s. But yeah, I mean, I think the thing for women to know is that you can recover from it, and okay. that there's, you know, you can really see change and transformation in your life. At the same time, it's a commitment, right? You have to do the work. You have to, what was that?
But you also have to keep working at it.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you at one point thought there was no fixing it? Like, what made you seek therapy and actually be able to manage your anxiety?
I think it was my early 20s. And I was kind of like thinking like what I was experiencing didn't feel normal. You know, this doesn't seem right. I don't think other people really kind of experience what I experienced. So I just took it upon myself to find a therapist. And actually my first therapist was amazing. And it was a really, really good fit. And that was really, really helpful. I don't think I ever got to a point where I felt like I couldn't overcome it. Because I think I always believed that there was like a transformation. That I was going to get through it. And that I was going to overcome it.
This was before you were even a therapist?
Yeah.
Did any of this make you kind of go into therapy?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely had an impact.
For sure.
Now, what are your thoughts on the whole stigma surrounding anxiety, or how people are using it lightly nowadays? You know, instead of I'm nervous or I'm not feeling well, it's like I have anxiety. I feel like all the kids now are just suffering from
anxiety. It's a great question. I think that could be one of the disadvantages around you know,
talking about it
and it being all over social media. There's definitely a danger to that, for sure.
How do you think, do you think there's a way to unstigmatize anxiety or how people are perceiving it, or some people to take it serious?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I know I have.
It's really complicated now, right? Because we want to, like, even as a therapist and an educator, you want people to be aware, but you don't want them to cling on to something that might not be what they're actually experiencing, or is there even a diagnosis, right?
Exactly. Like, I think my personal opinion, because I see a lot of kids and teens, and I see them using it lightly. I feel like it all starts with psychoeducation, like you're saying, right? Like teaching people how to differentiate, this is anxiety, this is not. You're just having a bad moment or whatever.
Yeah.
But the same with parents, because, you know, there's an age where like, oh, my kid doesn't know any better. Like, no, like listen to them. And actually the same way you would listen to an adult, listen to a kid. If they're telling you, you know, they're having all these symptoms, like it's not normal.
Yeah.
Whether it reaches a diagnosis or not, they're going through something, right?
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, it's a complicated subject, but I think psychoeducation is very important for everybody, for the whole community.
Definitely.
And just talking about it.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think in the beginning, too, when you asked me about what anxiety is, we talked about that it's an emotion, right? It's this natural emotion that we have, and that occasional anxiety is a part of life, right? But then when it becomes problematic, when it's more of this consistent, persistent thing that kind of really takes over and impacts your ability to function, impacts your ability to achieve goals. So really, yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on.
Yeah. We all feel anxious at some point. But if my anxiety stops me from doing what I'm supposed to do, then that's when it's, you know, a problem.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. I love this conversation, and I really do hope that all of this information doesn't go to waste and it gets to the people that it has to get to.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you have anything to say, if you liked our interview, please leave us a comment. And don't forget to subscribe. We have new interviews every Friday. See you next week.